It was almost like a ticket bank, like a food bank for tickets. And then with the pandemic, things obviously changed a lot, and the NHS came into sharp focus. We were commissioned to do some specific work by the NHS, and that just blossomed really, really rapidly as the events industry returned. Those event partners were really keen to give back to those people, and we've just kind of we've spread out from there onwards, really.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, and I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in, and by doing so, you bring people with you. Your passion becomes theirs, and I call this the power of purpose. Now, one of the most effective ways to communicate any message is through live events. Live events are hubs of culture and society. They bring people together and create shared experiences and foster a collective sense of community. And don't we all appreciate them so much more after lockdowns? After those 2 years of global lockdowns, we need to gather and experience collective euphoria through live events. And it feels more important than ever now. Yet increasingly, event tickets are becoming ever more expensive and difficult to get hold of. Today, I'm joined by Alex Dedman, Head of Strategic Communications at Tickets for Good, an innovative social enterprise working to break down this barrier by providing free and discounted tickets for NHS charity sector workers and cost of living payment recipients. With an extensive background in communications, music and education, Alex has collaborated with prominent organisations such as the disability arts charity Under the Stars, Tramlines Festival, Sheffield City Council and the University of Sheffield. Now, my first ever job in communications was as music editor of my university newspaper. I was dance music editor because I was really into dance music, still am. So really great to see your music background. Alex, it's a real pleasure having you on the show. Tell us a bit more about how you got to where you got to today.
Great. Wow. What a big question. So without going too far back, my grandma was a brilliant communicator. She worked in London. She was a tour guide. She was Russian Jewish. She'd already, England was her third country by the time she got here. She met my granddad during the war as a British soldier. And she was just a wonderful, warm, inclusive character. She was so good at knitting together lots of different people. And she was also a brilliant storyteller as well. I like to think that I've got a bit of her character in me. So I guess that's the kind of the communicating and the storytelling element of who I am. But in terms of how I got to where I am now, it's a question I ask myself as well sometimes. Just purely passion-led. So passion for music, it runs in the family, so as well as my grandma, she was a concert pianist and worked within music. And I think I always loved music, like you, also dance music as a youngster and as a teenager, sort of wanting to DJ and wanting to play. So we found a collective of similar people at school, so that grows out a little bit. It's not just about me then. And then we needed gigs, so how nobody's booking us. Okay, so we're going to put on some events of our own. And that's when suddenly it's like, oh, well, we need to tell people about those events, so I'm going to call up the local paper or send an email to somebody. And I sort of walked into PR without really knowing that's exactly what I was doing. I certainly didn't call it PR in the very early years. That then developed sort of running events, running my own events and being involved in bigger and bigger events. And there's probably almost 10 years before I actually used my services for anybody else. So up to that point, I had done a lot. I'd worked in journalism. I'd written a lot through my degree and for various different projects. But whenever I was talking about something, it was very much totally my passion. So it was the event that I was running or myself as an artist. The motivation around that is quite naturally, I think, what you would describe as purpose driven. And then with Tramline started 2009, my dad was a big part of that. I was a promoter in the first year. By year three, 2011, I was asked to join the team on the PR front. And a great PR person called Natalie Johnson was the head of council comms at the time, and she was given time off as part of the council support for the festival to run the PR for Tramlines. And I came in as kind of a dog's body, so calling up NME and just getting coverage for the festival. And I suppose I learned, that's really when I started to learn some of the more conventional PR skills, should I say. And then also volunteered at a charity at the same time, that was Under the Stars, that developed into more regular work. So it's a very natural progression, and it's always felt to me very purpose-driven. And I realised that my work in events could actually support a genre. So we're now kind of I'm looking at doing something good for this genre, which sort of drum, bass and jungle in my case. And then you realise that your work in the nighttime economy has a benefit to the city, and there's a cultural value to that. And now you're kind of thinking about the city as a whole, and that for me that's Sheffield. And then there's this company that arises in Sheffield, Tickets for Good. The CEO, Stephen Rimmer, I'd always been involved with him and his projects from sort of late teens. And now we have this really exciting Sheffield project and Sheffield company, and I want to amplify its work because it's doing what I think is good work, but also it's great for the city. I like the fact that a Sheffield company can impact the nation and then internationally as well. So it's just a kind of a widening out.
I know what a good city at Sheffield is because I went to Nottingham Trent University and I worked for the paper there for 3 years, the student paper called Platform. And we would go to Sheffield. It was close enough for students to go to. And I remember just the idea that you'd get free CDs back then as they were, and you get free entry to these gigs that I want to go to. And as I say, the dance gig, but also I loved indie music as well. So it was, I've always been into different genres, but you know, some of those venues in Sheffield are absolutely brilliant, aren't they, for gigs. Tell us a bit more about Tickets for Good.
So crucially, we get donated tickets onto the platform, and then we distribute them out free or discounted. I think you kind of summed it up really well at the beginning. So we have lots of NHS workers, we have charity workers, people affected by cost of living who register onto the platform and then can claim those tickets. And we're always kind of looking of ways that we can broaden out those people who receive those tickets as well. There's various kind of early iterations of the company. At one stage, it was almost like a ticket bank, like a food bank for tickets. So tickets would be donated in, charities could register and then spread them out to their user base. And then with the pandemic, things obviously changed a lot and the NHS came into sharp focus. We were commissioned to do some specific work by the NHS, and that just blossomed really, really rapidly as the events industry returned. Initially, we were looking at online offerings, things like sort of dance classes and cookery classes that NHS staff could participate in. But as events did come back, there was clearly a sharp focus on the NHS, and those event partners were really keen to give back to those people. And we've just kind of spread out from there onwards, really.
Have you had any really big communications wins during those periods where, I mean, as a former journalist myself, I still get that kind of excitement of when we do a big PR campaign and a big national newspaper said they're going to run it the next day. You never know for sure if they're actually going to do it until you see it. You know, I still get up early, pick up my phone now rather than running down to the newsagent. It used to be running down to the newsagent. But tell us about some of those big moments you've had.
Yeah, well, I think the very first time that I wrote a press release about Tickets for Good, because I wasn't working regularly. I was just brought in to do this one particular job. And it was a little bit, I wouldn't say it's a complicated concept, but a little bit. It was certainly a new concept. And when I'm talking about a festival, if I'm sending out a press release for Tramlines, people know what a festival is. I don't have to go into that level of detail and explain that to them. It's okay for me to assume that they know what I mean when I refer to a festival. But there wasn't really, there wasn't a platform of this nature. So I could sort of use analogy and perhaps, as I said, like a food bank for tickets. It really worked. So I remember the CEO and founder was excitedly like, Alex, this is great. I'm finally able to properly explain to people what it is that we're trying to do. So I spent a long time with him trying to really digest it myself so that I clearly understood what it was and then could relay it out to people in a way that was understood. And I think beyond the press, we did get press from that, but it also, for all of the different interested parties, stakeholders, people we might want to work with, it gave him a good document that he could use and it was understood. So it was it was very early days, but it was a bit of a breakthrough moment for me and for Tickets for Good, I think.
Well, I think that's a really good tip there for any communicators. It's if you haven't got something that someone already knows and has heard of, the analogy really is the thing, isn't it? You know, just thinking, what is the analogy here of what we're doing? When you've got something brand new, people need that quick shorthand. They need to be able to say in two or three words, what is it? You know, as you've just said there, food bank for tickets, or, you know, for ages, lots of things were the Uber of, or the WeWork of, or the, you know, all those kind of different things. But you do need to have those. People need to very quickly in their mind say what you are, and you can't spend a long time explaining it. And if you are explaining it for a long time, you need to work harder at that explanation because you can get better. How about any failures? Have you had any communications failures where it just hasn't quite landed for you the way you wanted?
Well, I don't think I've touched wood. I don't think I've done anything too terrible for any of my clients. There are, there's sometimes, you'll know this, where you have a story and you think, this is perfect. This is exactly what people want. I know this will be well received. It ticks all those boxes. It works for this publication. It works for that publication. And you send it out and you don't get the response you anticipated. And it's like, why? Because there's always a few moving parts that you don't control, like other news happenings, obviously one of them. And I think those moments always make me really double down on, is the messaging right? Is this gone to the right person? Where's the choke point that this didn't quite get through, so it wasn't picked up? And then on the flip side, I'm sure you've experienced this too. You might have something that you think, well, this is kind of interesting. I think we'll get a bit of coverage for this, but for whatever reason, it just blows up completely and suddenly it becomes like a big viral story. I think a very early communication job I had was working at a festival called The Big Chill in about 2003. So I think I was 20, quite young still. Myself and my partner were invited to be on the control team. So it was a really interesting comms job, and yeah. I loved it because it felt like I was in the heart of the festival. I couldn't drive, and the festival director, or maybe assistant director, wanted a lift into the festival site. We were based slightly off the site. I said, oh, I'll do it. And I remember my partner looking at me and thinking, you can't drive, Alex. And I did it very carefully. I didn't injure anybody. I drove onto the site, and I was coming back. I was so excited. I was like, I'm here at a festival. I'm an adult, and I'm driving a vehicle about 6 miles an hour. And it was really thrilling. And there was this massive entranceway to the building where we were based in, and everyone was sat outside because it was a nice day, and I had to take this turn, and I just took it at full speed, not really know what I was doing, crashed into the fence post, put my head through the Perspex golf buggy window. And once everybody worked out I was okay, they completely fell around laughing. I was mortified. So embarrassing.
That's a bit of a low-level crash, isn't it? A 6 mile an hour golf buggy. Yeah. So it sounds like your communication skills are better than your driving skills. Actually, and I've been to the Big Chill Festival. I might well have been at that very festival that you were.
Wow.
you're at yourself. But I love the Big Chill, and actually, marketing wise, the Big Chill is a really interesting one because it came about, I think, that kind of name as a antithesis to the kind of festivals at that stage when the Big Chill came about, had all started to become a bit unchill, and there was. And I kind of think of like the Reading Festival, where you'd go along and then you'd have people shouting all night, keeping each other awake and just, you know, just getting absolutely drunk and absolutely off their mind. And actually there was a bit of a feel, hold on, festivals don't need to be like this. Festivals can be chilled out and relaxed. And so it kind of got into a vibe. And most festivals now have almost copied that. You know, there aren't all that many festivals that people want to go to where they go, I just want 3 days of unchill. You know, I think people like the idea of you can go along to the festival. Yes, you can relax, but actually you want to be able to chill out as well. And that was a really good one. Good kind of marketing wise one of actually taking something that would become one thing and just completely in the other direction. If you think of Latitude and all those other festivals that you've got now, they all kind of market themselves in that way as kind of, this is a more chilled place to be. Right. For you, what makes a really good message?
It's something that gives somebody that moment of understanding of, and as I've sort of described earlier, so that they read it and they have that, it's that resolution of anxiety, the anxiety being, what is this? I don't understand it. And then it's like, oh, I understand this. This fits into all the things that I understand. And often that moment of understanding might not actually be full kind of total comprehension of all the different elements that make up your messaging. But it's a resolution of anxiety. It's a sort of happy moment of I get this and I can place it within all the other things that I understand and that I know about. And then hopefully I can talk about it and help spread that message out there. And it is when it is at its core, when it could seem a bit of a complex message. I remember your the marketing lady from Tony's Chocolonely talking about the how they source their chocolate and the whole process and that, and the challenge of condensing this onto a chocolate bar wrapper and how you convey all that. There can be kind of a bit of complexity behind the scenes, but once you get it into something that is digestible, it's a great feeling and it's a great challenge as well.
And that's Nicola Matthews, and one of the ways that they do it, and I thought this was so cool, and I only found this out on when she came on our on Communicating Purpose, so do have a listen to that. It's the when you open a bar of Tony's Chocolonely, you've got all these chunks that are different sized, and that is to show the representation of the world being unfair. And and she said that lots of their kind of customers are really annoyed that they can't split their bars into equally sized chunks, and people say, you know, complain, and they say, look, this is why we've done this, the world isn't fair, and people get unequal chunks of luck essentially in life. Where do you get your news from yourself?
Well, all sorts of different sources, newsletters, email newsletters. I have, because of quite a lot of my work is around local PR, so I look at all of the local outlets like the Sheffield Star, the Examiner, the sort of Reach PLC and the JPIs. There's a really good publication in Sheffield called The Tribune, which is there's one in Manchester as well, and it's a long form subscription model, which is just great. The work they're doing, they're going into things in a way that other publications can't as well. We've got Exposed magazine in Sheffield. I'm a big fan of local radio. I was calling up Radio Sheffield when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and I've not stopped really. And now they actually listen to me, which is great. I can call them up and they say, "Hey Alex, what have you got for us today?" And I really, really value that, what they do in the community, and I think local news is so important. But then all of the sort of the music weeks and all the big music publications, Ticketing Business News, who run the Ticketing Business Forum, is an important one for Tickets for Good as well.
No, I'm a big fan of local myself as well, and spent 3 years on a local paper after the after my university paper. And actually, very recently, in the last couple of months, we just did a campaign for a client, and we got them into really big trade media for them, but we got them in a local paper as well. And it was there that one of their customers saw them and said, saw you in the Eastern Daily Press, would love to work with you. And it just shows the power, actually. I think people trust local papers in a way that they don't necessarily trust national papers. They feel more connected to those local papers, and radio, as you say, as well. There's that real connection there, because you already know with a local paper that it's got information that's going to be absolutely relevant to you. In kind of PR now, it's almost seen as deadly uncool to ever think that the locals are any good. It's all been about digital marketing. But actually, as you say there, there's a bit of a resurgence of different locals. And you talked about the Tribune. There's a few others that are doing local news really well. And also the hyper-local news as well. I like the real hyper-local news blogs, where it's basically news about the neighbourhood. So have a look out for some of those different things. And if you haven't looked at your local paper for a while, consider picking it up. What kind of mediums do you find are the most effective for getting messages out in terms of work-wise?
I think for Tickets for Good, word of mouth is really, really important. There's nothing quite beats when one of your colleagues has been to an event with Tickets for Good. They come in the next day, perhaps before they've used it, they might want to test it to be sure that it works. There's all these sorts of things out there. If they've just heard about it, almost might seem too good to be true. And then they do it, they get the ticket, they go to the event with their family, they come into work the next day. Hey, we did this, it worked. It's a natural thing, you can sign up now. And I think that is really, that sort of proof of concept is really, really important. How we obviously need, there's a stage where we have to do some communication. So there's all sorts of different, you understand the kind of nudge, and you never quite know exactly which is the one that got them there. We do communicate a lot with the trust, with the NHS trust, and with charities, and perhaps with local councils as well for the ticket bank for the cost of living project. I think that's really important. We try and empower comms teams as much as possible who want to highlight things to their staff, and so give them all the tools they need to talk about this. Hopefully, we can get onto their intranet or wherever they share information internally. I do think the big news story is when we launched our ticket bank project last year, and we did get that kind of big wave of national media, and we're in the press, we're in the papers, we get some TV features and radio. Those things are really impactful, definitely. I'm always thinking and looking and working out how things could be improved. I'm a big fan of the kind of plain text email format. I'm sure you'll see a few of these, which is doing away with all the kind of bells and whistles and flashy images, and just back down to just copy, which is actually what we really need, particularly as professionals. We don't really need to be sold to. We know we want this information. We just wanted to find it. And like things like WhatsApp groups. I mean, I've just prior to this podcast, I've just been back and forth with a producer on from Radio Sheffield on WhatsApp, and that kind of immediacy is really good. And I've joined a few WhatsApp groups for publications, and I'm wondering whether I should actually have a PR blast WhatsApp group. I'm sort of interested in trialing that, because I just think the data shows that people use that really well. So yeah, lots of mediums to think about, and then ever jostling as to which one is the most important.
It's an ever-changing world, and it's one that we have to keeping up with. Alex Dedman, Head of Strategic Communications at Tickets for Good. You've joined me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. Thanks very much for joining on the show. If you'd like to learn more about Tickets for Good, there'll be information on the link to this. And if you'd like to hear about how Higginson Strategy supports purpose-led organisations, go to higginsonstrategy.com. This episode was produced by Catherine Kitchen.